These are African rhythms, passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands. Move with the rhythms, get down.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. Today, Randy Weston and the African Rhythm. Africa World Now Project is next. In 2000 Seasons, Akwe Erema writes, "We are not a people of yesterday. Do they ask how many single seasons we have flowed from our beginnings till now? We shall point them to the proper beginning of their counting. On a clear night when the light of the moon has blighted the ancient woman and her seven children, on such a night tell them to go alone into the world. There, have them count first the one, then the seven, and after the seven, all the other stars visible to their eyes alone. After that beginning, they will be ready for the sand. Let them seek the sea line. They will not have to ponder where to start. Have them count the sand. Let them count it grain from single grain. And after they have reached the end of that counting, we shall not ask them to number the raindrops in the ocean. But with the wisdom of the aftermath, have them ask us again how many seasons have flowed by since our people were unborn. The air everywhere around is poisoned with truncated tales of our origins. That is also part of the wreckage of our people. What has been cast abroad is not a thousandth of our history. Even if its quality were truth, the people called our people are not a hundredth of our people, but the haze of this fouled world exists to wipe out knowledge of our way, the way. These mists are here to keep us lost, the destroyers' easy prey." It is the mist of the destroyers that Randy Weston bottled. With the spirit of the ancestors, the stories he created were maps to piece the fragments together, the fragments of a fractured history, a torn being. And the rhythm upon which he built those stories are the reminders to seek oneness, a wholeness. Rhythm, according to Miri Baraka, is the natural motion of matter. The rhythm Randy Weston sought to create was the material recreation of the map of harmony from which the world, the African world, was dislodged. The universe, which is materialized through creative human expression. Baraka adds, "The composite rhythm of everything is everywhere. The whole life, time, place, and condition shapes rhythm. The where you be at, blood say. And it is a physical mental construct. Finally, it is deeper because it goes deep, will grow deep, i.e. the perception of the finest particular of a rhythm accesses properties in the perceiver or confirms them. Rhythm's infinite circles of transformation in modes and forms and direction we do not even know exist. Africans use rhythm to speak and sing, to dance, to communicate over long distances with each other and to the forces of the universe. Its censorship, its control, its banding was not without political, social, and cultural imposition. As a result, Africans in the diaspora cultivated new methods and technologies of spiritual practice. It was inevitable, as African religion sought to discover the human relationship to what exists always by tuning into it and becoming, at whatever level, at one, cognizant, conscious, with knowing, being possessed by it, as the direct expression of the whole, and as a direct experience. This is the holiness, wholeness, at one, the revelation. Today we pay tribute to Randy Weston, the artist, theorist, freedom seeker, spiritual warrior, the historian, the manifestation of the healing and creative spirits of nature and the universe. What you will hear next and what we present to you are the words, artistry, and ideas of Randy Weston. Our show was produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities of Standing Rock, Venezuela, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Brazil, Colombia, Kenya, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Enjoy the program.
Fortunate in many ways. I went to Nigeria in 1961. I went to Nigeria in 1963 with such great artists as Langston Hughes, Nina Simone, Lionel Hampton, with 29 of us, you know. And then I did a State Department tour in 1967. And I toured West Africa, North Africa, and Beirut, and Lebanon. And I had a wonderful band of Clifford Jordan on tenor saxophone, Ray Copeland on trumpet. I had on bass, Bill Wood. Ed Blackwell was on drums. And I took my son, 15 years old. And we spent 3 months in Africa traveling, you know, West Africa and North Africa. But wherever I went, I requested, I wanted to hear the traditional music. I wanted to find the oldest people I can find. I wanted to hear the oldest music that I can find. Because during the Berkshire period, I forgot to mention, they encouraged me to get to buy records of prison songs, of songs on the plantation. So I was already collecting the older music of this country. So when our last country was Morocco, and we were so successful, we went back to New York. Moroccan people asked me to come back. I went back and I stayed 7 years in Morocco. While I was there, I would travel down the Sahara, up the mountains, all over, looking for the traditional music of the people. And I discovered the Ganawa people. These are the black people of Morocco. They're from the ancient kingdoms of below the Sahara, ancient kingdoms of Mali, Songhai in the old days. They were taking as slaves and soldiers. They were taken to Morocco. And they produce a fantastic, powerful spiritual music. I discovered them. I fell in love with their music. They fell in love with me. And we have the same history. Our ancestors were taken across the Atlantic Ocean. They had to walk the Sahara Desert. But we came together, and they taught me a lot about music. Number one, that African music is old as Africa itself, that the whole concept of music began in Africa, and that the ancient civilizations, for example, Egypt, they were in tune with the galaxy, they were in tune with the heavens, and even architecture is visible music for them. Painting is visible music. So because it involves harmony, it involves sound. So by being with these people, they brought me back to the roots of music. And I realized how much Africa has given the world, and especially in music. Trees are powerful because of the root. And the tree never leaves its root, you see. That's why it's so powerful. We've left our roots. We've become westernized. We've become materialistic. So therefore, old people don't mean anything. In African society, everybody has a role. And we grew up, we used to hang out with the old people and listen to their stories. That's what we used to do as kids, because we knew they had that experience. They would tell us things. You know? But this society is, you know, you're old, this is the latest thing, this is the latest one. No. There's a lot of confusion there. So for us to clean ourselves spiritually, we got to go back to the roots of what we do. And I want to find out why I play the piano like I play. I want to find out where this comes from. See? So when you go to the traditional people, they say, hey, God give you this gift. You see? Then you have to decide what you're going to do with this gift. He's going to give it to you and he's going to take it away. You're only here for a minute on the planet. What are you going to do with it? Then you start doing your research. You start going back to Basie and Ellington and Duke and all them great musicians who played that music to make black people happy. Where at the time they had no reason to be happy. You know what I mean? So then you look at it and then you realize that we are all healers. We all come out of the African tradition as healers. It's an African music. It's not jazz, not blues. These are names that come after. This is African civilization. I grew up in an African village in Brooklyn. If we have to respect our ancestors and they came here as Africans, how can we be anything else but African?
Choose to call your band African Rhythms, which is also the title you selected for our book. Tell us why you choose to call it African Rhythms.
Well, it's a long story, but it goes back to my father.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite young. He told me that I was an African born in America. And I have to understand and study African civilization before slavery, before colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
Because all you're going to get in school is what happened to us after, you know? So from that point on, I've been programmed. My dad made me take piano lessons. my mother, the black church, the blues, and growing up with people like Max Roach and Cecil Payne. And I grew up in a very rich area of African-American people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And one day I was at Max Roach's house, and the word jazz was discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we'd never used the word jazz, ever. We say we're going to play Duke Ellington's music, or Count Basie's music, or Billy Holiday's music. And after hearing the conversation with Miles Davis, Max Roach, and George Russell, I decided I wanted to give my music a name. And that's why I called it African Rhythms, because it is the contribution of African people in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you could say African Rhythm is about so many different kinds of music. You know, but you chose that specifically to describe not only your music, but your ensembles. And that all stemmed from that time, that period growing up.
Yeah, because you see, you know, I grew up with giants.
Mm-hmm.
Giants, I mean. And all these brothers were African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Great drummers, saxophone players, trombone players, trumpet players, singers. I said, wait a minute, these are all African people here. Where did that come from? Came from the motherland. So everything I do is Africa because I'm an African man.
Mm-hmm.
When I touch the piano, it is no longer a European instrument, it's an African instrument. Because the spirituality of my sisters, my ancestors, I'm sorry, go into that piano.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, I always used to watch our people because my dad, being from the Caribbean, Panama and Jamaica, my mother being from Virginia, I'm born in Brooklyn, New York, and they were different, but they were similar. The way they cooked their food, the way they talked, the way they danced, the music, but the whole common denominator was Africa. And I think I love my people, I love my ancestors. And Africa has not been recognized. The truth of African civilization has not been recognized up until today, you know. So for me, growing up with such royalty, I take my music to tell the story of our elders, of our ancestors, and how much we've created, how much we've given to the world in civilization. And in particular, music.
Where do you suppose your father became so interested in his African heritage and in African culture? Because he himself didn't get a chance to travel to Africa until you encouraged it. So where did he get it?
Well, you know, the Jamaican heritage, the Maroons. Mm-hmm. My dad is descended of Maroons.
Mm-hmm.
They were great fighters. They never surrendered to the English. Plus, he was a believer of Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey made a tremendous impact about Africa. And Marcus Garvey would say, like, rise up, you mighty race. And I never could understand how we could be a mighty race when we always seem to be on the bottom mm-hmm. of everything, you know? But Dad, he spent time reading. He had many books written by historians from the Caribbean, from the United States, told the truth about Africa, you know. And the great writer, Robin Kelly, did some research, and he found out when my father came from Panama to Cuba, and when he arrived here on the immigration form, he had African Spanish, you see. So my dad, he loved Africa with a passion to the point he would talk to anybody about Africa. He would talk to the kids in the street about Africa. So I was really programmed at a very early age.
Well, you know, I asked that question about him and about you as well because your father, definitely, and you as well, came along at a time when African Americans didn't necessarily want to express their Africanness or their interest in African culture because many African Americans have been programmed in such a way as to not feel that sense of pride. So although you talk about growing up amongst a lot of great African Americans, that kind of pride, that kind of cultural pride, wasn't necessarily widespread during the time when your father was coming along and you were coming along as well. So, you know, I'm just curious as to, you know, what was it that made your upbringing so different from so many others?
Well, you see, the further we go back, mm-hmm. our ancestors were close to Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, we've only been in America for about 400 years, which mm-hmm. is nothing in time. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather, my grandmother, who I never met, they thought as Africans. They survived as Africans. My father and mother, they survived that way because they had to go through slavery, through racism, through omission, you name it, you know. But it was a kind of a situation wherein people like Ellington, people like U.B. Blake, James Reese Europe, they were very much in tune with Africa, you see? And what happened in the 20s and 30s and 40s, Dizzy wrote music about ancient Africa. He wrote music about Kush in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So it was there. But when integration took place, then we got cut off from the motherland. But before that, we had some powerful thinkers. Paul Robeson had a tremendous collection of African music. Mm-hmm. Count Basie, he recorded with Joe Louis a song called King Joe. Duke, Black, Brown, and Beige. You see, so that period, that was our strongest period because we thought we survived as an African people in a strange land. But how we survived was the music that we produced. You listen to that early music, pure African music, pure African music. I'm always interested in, I'd like to go back and see when the first African saw a piano and what he did with it. I remember as a boy growing up in Brooklyn, and a guy would come to my father's house from South Carolina, and he would have a knife and fork and make music. And we call what they call ham bone music. So we never left Africa. That's the big secret. And today, you watch our people, the way we walk, the way we talk, the way we argue, the way we cook our food, is Africa. You see? Well, and I learned that from Duke Ellington, because Duke, when I had a chance to talk to him, he said, one of the reasons for my creativity, I watch African people. Watch what we do. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the continent, I found out we never left Africa. But we don't realize it here, you see, because we've been cut off deliberately from the school system, from Hollywood, from the media. The media today is worse than ever. During time of segregation, we had black movies, black film, black ballroom. So when I was a kid, I could go to a black theater and see a short on Bessie Smith. I could see a short on Count Basie. Nat King Cole had his own show. Hazel Scott had her own show. You see, that was a time when we knew our culture. And the rest of the world recognized our culture, you see. But with integration, slowly but surely, we got away from mom and pop and grandma and grandpa, going back to the ancestors. And for me, it's vital that we go back because they had the secrets to survive.
You mentioned something interesting a few moments ago. You said that the piano, which is known as a European invention or a European construct, although we know there are antecedents in Africa, you said that when you sit down at the piano, it's no longer a European instrument. It's now an African instrument. So let's talk about that. But then let's also talk about the fact that when you play the piano, you don't play the piano in, you know, the positioning of your hands, your fingers, is not the same as the classical European training as far as playing the piano. When you play the piano, It's almost like you're playing a drum. Talk about that.
Well, all the giants played like that.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Gardner, Duke Ellington, they all played the piano like that because African music is older than Europe. We were making music thousands and thousands of years before Europe ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and the Moors were the ones who brought music into Europe, you see. So when I say that, what I mean is everything I touch is African, because I'm an African man.
Mm-hmm.
And I survived because my mother and father taught me that. So whatever I do, it's an African expression. If I touch the piano, that piano becomes an African instrument, because music is spirit. Africa is spirit, you see. Not something that you can use logic. It's something more deep than what we call logic. It's more deep. It's a spiritual thing, you see. And it's true of our people. You watch the way we walk. You watch the black people when they walk. The way we talk, the way we eat our food, the way we cook, the way we dance. We don't do it like other people on the planet, because we never left Africa. And for me, our music in the United States, our music in Brazil and Cuba, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Trinidad, you name it all, is simply for me an extension of African civilization. Since Africa created civilization, then wherever our people were taken, wherever we came in contact with, whether it was a bottle or a table or a washboard or a rubber band or this way or with the feet, we never left Africa, because the Egyptians have a word for that. They call Turath, which means ancestral memory. And a man like John Henry Clark said, he said that what happened 10,000 years ago can affect what happens today, can affect what happens tomorrow. Because he said history is a current event, you see. And so therefore, I think so important, not only for African people, but for the whole planet, to know something about the planet Earth, know something about this planet. And you cannot know the history of this planet if you don't know the history of Africa.
Now, you have subsequently traveled all over Africa, been to most of the continent in your various travels as a musician and as someone who's deeply interested in cultural research and that kind of thing. And you had this rich upbringing that you described in Brooklyn. And your father, his influence as far as books and as far as influencing your way of thinking as an African born in America. All this transpired many years before you finally made it to the continent. You finally made your first trip to the continent in 1961. How were your initial travels to Africa, how did that confirm the things that you had already known and learned?
Well, my first trip to Africa was 1961. There were 29 of us.
Mm-hmm.
I took Booker Irvin on tenor saxophone, with Scobie Stroman on drums. Lyle Hampton had 8 members of his band. Babatunde Olatunji came back to Nigeria to come back with us. We had Jeffrey Holder from Trinidad, Brock Peters. We had 2 dancers for the Savoy Ballroom. We had Langston Hughes. It was a powerful group, you know. And the plane landed about 11 o'clock at night. And the doors of the plane opened up, and you could smell the air of West Africa. West Africa is a certain aroma.
And this was Lagos.
Lagos.
Right.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And they must have had about 50 drummers.
Mm-hmm.
And myself and Jeffrey and Brock Peters, we were the tallest. I don't know why we came out first. We were the tallest, you know. We came out, you know. And a young Nigerian man up there. Thank you.
We are currently listening to Africa World Nail Project's tribute to Randy Weston. Randy Weston, writing in African Rhythms, the autobiography of Randy Weston, arranged by Willard Jenkins, shares that, "I come to be a storyteller. I'm not a jazz musician. I'm really a storyteller through music, and I've had some amazing and unique experiences. When it comes to considering these experiences together, my quest is always in the spirit of our ancestors. Whether it's when I hung out as an inexperienced green piano player with the grandmaster drummer Max Roach, one of my Brooklyn homeboys, or for the first time I played for the great Charlie Yarbert Parker, whether it was playing in a little army band during the war trying to dodge bullets, or hanging with Thelonious Monk and being part of the vast sphere of influence, or being mesmerized by the Sufi masters, I'm constantly assembling all these forces to create my message, a message which comes directly through me, passed down from the ancestors and ultimately from the creator." Weston goes on to highlight the idea that in order to enact positive change, we must remember the greatness of our ancestors. We must open up our creative minds, open that door that we've sealed as a direct result of being taken away from Africa and enslaved. Additionally, we must celebrate our diversity as a people because we are a great people with unlimited spiritual resources. This is Randy Weston reminiscing and thinking back on his long life in African Rhythms, the autobiography of Randy Weston, arranged by Willard Jenkins. Weston has always been a part of that collective uplifting. We continue with Africa World Now Project's tribute to the great human theorist, Randy Weston. Continue to enjoy the show.
At the dawn of our epoch, in the biblical table of nations, there looms Ham, a very prominent figure, the mother, father, progenitor of the black race. Ham's progeny were Cush or Nubia, Kemet or Egypt, Put and Canaan. As we peer back through the portal of antiquity, we are drawn to one of the greatest civilizations of all time, the civilization of Egypt. We are told the story of Count Constantine Duvalny, one of Egypt's most prolific authors and elite historians. Duvalny, imbued with all the racial prejudices which were characteristic during his time, embarked upon a sojourn to Egypt. The year was 1783. The slave trade was at its zenith. He made a discovery about the African race that would forever change his outlook. As Duvalny described, all the inhabitants have a bloated face, puffed up eyes, wide nose, and thick lips. I was tempted to attribute it to the climate, but when I visited the Sphinx, its appearance gave me the key to this riddle. On seeing that head, typically Negro in all its features, I remembered the remarkable passage where Herodotus, the 5th century historian, says, "As for me, I judge the Colchians to be a colony of the Egyptians, because, like them, they are black with woolly hair." Duvalny continues, in other words, the The ancient Egyptians were true Negroes of the same type as all native-born Africans. Just think that this race of black men today are slaves and the object of our scorn is the very race to which we owe our arts, sciences, and even the use of speech. But as profound and culturally fruitful as the great empire of Egypt or Kemet was, there was one greater and even mightier which stretched into the dawn of time, where myth, legend, and history merge as one. A nation brought forth from the remnants of the great Atlantis. This great nation was Cush or Nubia. Egypt was the child and flower of the great Cushite nation. In 1962, a new discovery occurred which illuminated the origins of Africa's oldest civilization. An excavation headed by Keith C. Steele, director of the University of Chicago's Oriental Institute, unearthed the birthplace of Pharaonic-centered civilization, several generations older than the first historic Egyptian dynasty. But this we knew, for it is corroborated by one of the great historians and travelers of the ancient world, Diodorus of Sicily, who wrote, and I quote, "The Nubians say that the Egyptians are one of their colonies, which was brought into Egypt by Osiris. They add that from them, as from their authors and ancestors, the Egyptians get most of their laws. It is also from them that the Egyptians have learned to honor kings and gods and bury them with such pomp. Sculpture and writing were invented by they, the Nubians. The Nubians cite evidence that they are more ancient than the Egyptians," end quote. Therefore, it is to Cush or Nubia that we turn our gaze, for it is from this root that a civilization was born which would make all upon the earth anew. Ashe. Thank you.
We are currently listening to Africa World Now Project's tribute to Randy Weston. Randy Weston writing in African Rhythms, the autobiography of Randy Weston, arranged by Willard Jenkins, shares that, "I come to be a storyteller. I'm not a jazz musician. I'm really a storyteller through music, and I've had some amazing and unique experiences. When it comes to considering these experiences together, my quest is always in the spirit of our ancestors. Whether it's when I hung out as an inexperienced green piano player with the grandmaster drummer Max Roach, one of my Brooklyn homeboys, or for the first time I played for the great Charlie Yarbert Parker, whether it was playing in a little army band during the war trying to dodge bullets, or hanging with Thelonious Monk and being part of the vast sphere of influence, or being mesmerized by the Sufi masters, I'm constantly assembling all these forces to create my message, a message which comes directly through me, passed down from the ancestors and ultimately from the creator." Weston goes on to highlight the idea that in order to enact positive change, we must remember the greatness of our ancestors. We must open up our creative minds, open that door that we've sealed as a direct result of being taken away from Africa and enslaved. Additionally, we must celebrate our diversity as a people because we are a great people with unlimited spiritual resources. This is Randy Weston reminiscing and thinking back on his long life in African Rhythms, the autobiography of Randy Weston, arranged by Willard Jenkins. Weston has always been a part of that collective uplifting. We continue with Africa World Now Project's tribute to the great human theorist, Randy Weston. Continue to enjoy the show.
Thank you.
That's it for Africa World Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms. Email africaworldnowproject@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist, Moise Mutale, Africa World Now Project media correspondent, Funda Ngunda, senior research, content contributor, and production director, Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior researcher, and content contributor and production associate, Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, technology advisor is Byron Gray of GrayWorks Technology, and creative director is Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project is heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC, NPR affiliate and broadcasting service of Winston-Salem State University. Shows are archived weekly on SoundCloud. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.